Of Disney or our own lives?
Yeah.
Hey,
you're welcome to talk about your own life.
That's a different podcast.
I think I'll give that one a miss.
This is a special episode that will explore love in Disney movies. Many of my guests talk about the importance of Disney movies during their childhood. This episode will be a discussion about Disney, and as it is a special one, you're going to hear three guests who give their opinion on this subject.
Can you guys just maybe tell me if you're a Disney fan or not?
Ooh.
Who wants to start?
I'll start.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. I think I've been a Disney fan since I was small because I grew up watching the films, so the classics, and I still enjoy it now because it's just lighthearted and I had a good childhood, so it brings me back to that happy childhood place.
Well, I'm a bit torn because I wouldn't consider myself a Disney fan, but I've consumed a lot of Disney. Especially as of late, my girlfriend's a massive Disney fan, so I guess I guess I've got no choice. I do like a few of the films, especially the shorts before.
Oh, yeah. I think the shorts are really good. I don't know. Yeah, again, I grew up with them, but mainly the princess-focused ones.
Oh, okay.
So that's quite interesting for our discussion on love as well and relationships. There are some, I think with Disney films, because they're animated, there are some scenes that just like stick in my mind, like pictures or images that really stick with me. But I feel like a lot of people my age are like still like obsessed with them, and I've kind of like moved past them, kind of like with Harry Potter. A lot of people our age are like...
That is me. I'm that person.
I'm like, I want to hold on to it so badly.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
that
it's,
is
it's
me.
Been and
gone. I can't let go. I don't want to let go. It makes me happy. So
yeah,
I'll hold on.
They've got cult classics among the films, haven't they?
Yeah, definitely.
So which one is your favourite? Which Disney is your favourite?
Probably for me, the Aristocats. The Aristocats.
Yeah.
The Parisian Cats one. I'm a cat lover anyway. I just think it's really...
Person.
Thank you. I just think it's really funny. With like the geese like waddling, the jazz band are amazing, and I love the stereotypical like cat and mouse chase is kind of subverted because like the cats help out the mouse to help find O'Malley the alley cat. I just think it's really funny. Yeah.
Okay.
I have to go for Mulan. I just love the mixture of like the comedy, the music, the script. I can watch it over and over. Never gets old. Everyone, like all my friends, we know the lyrics to all the songs. So if it comes on, that is our chant. And I love like The Lion King and The Princess and the Frog as well. But I think Mulan has to top it. I just think it's a timeless classic. You can just watch it over and over and not get bored.
I like Coco. I like Coco. Like one of the more recent films.
Oh, Disney Pixar.
Absolutely love it. And I think second in my list would be the third Lion King movie with like the commentary.
That is interesting. I mean, second one I can understand.
Is
third
the
one
with Timon and Pumbaa's commentary, like they pause the.
Yeah.
They
it
pause
is. It's like a re. Yeah. It rehashes the first one.
Yeah. And they like
commentary.
It's pretty much playing the first one, but with their live commentary. I was like, oh, that's cool. That's like, you know, video reacting.
It's not a new film.
Oh, sorry, no.
I haven't seen it.
It's a nice rip-off, but hey. And I used to have the VHS.
Yeah.
Oh, video.
The Aristocats.
I still have it.
I rented it like ages ago when I was a kid.
If you could keep only one love story from a Disney movie, which one would it be?
Out of all of them?
Yeah. Tough question.
Yeah, there's so many.
I love asking questions. I don't have the answers myself.
Wow. How convenient of you.
I quite like Lion King 2. I feel that was quite underrated. Simba's Pride. So Lion King 1's based off of Hamlet. Lion King 2 is based off of Romeo and Juliet. So And it's got a happy ending as well. So, and the songs in there, incredibly underrated. So I would keep that one so everyone else would have to watch it and then appreciate it.
Okay.
I'm quite suspicious of Disney sequels, you know, because it's like, I see them as individual films. There's like The Lion King, Cinderella, like just individual films. Like, I don't see why they would need to do a sequel when the story, I feel like, in Disney films is quite self-contained. Mm. Like, there are obviously opportunities for sequels with, like, characters having their own, like, kind of thing going on, but I just, yeah, I haven't watched any Disney sequels.
Is it true that they need to make remakes to keep the copyright? Is that a thing? I remember...
What, Disney themselves?
Yes.
I mean, I think it sounds familiar, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I really hope that doesn't wear out the, you know...
Like the live action
stuff. I've not seen any of the live action
ones. Me neither.
No, I think I want
to. I've seen the Jungle Book one.
Is it good?
To be honest, I enjoyed it just because it told a different story to the original. So it wasn't like a complete copy.
Yeah.
But the original does have the same, like, the charm, the music, yes. The kind of warm atmosphere. That
illustration.
Yeah, the art is amazing as well. And I think the live action remakes are just... I think we talked about it, but it's just kind of to make money rather than to make
They're
good
really
films.
They're really critically debated as well, like with Beauty and the Beast, with Emma Watson, like being able to sing or not sing. And I haven't seen it because I genuinely don't have... If I had young kids, I would go and see it, but I don't have any interest to see it.
You'd culture them in Disney.
It doesn't add anything to the story, so I just don't really see the point, except like...
I think
money,
I saw
obviously.
It. Yeah, I think I saw Beauty and the Beast on a plane ride, and the spectacle was nice. Like the whole the visuals were really good.
Yeah,
but
it's
I think
appealing.
It is appealing to watch. But I wouldn't watch it again.
Yeah.
Well, think I'm gonna chip in with the best one. The one I like the most.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Either that one of Brave, as in the love for herself and her independence, or Tangled. In the love, that's Disney, right? Tangled. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, was it Rapunzel?
Yes.
Yeah. And Rapunzel's love for her, like, again, her identity and her independence. And like, you know what? I don't care if you know, Flynn likes me with long hair or like, my mom wants my long hair to keep herself young.
Yeah.
I think that's,
I have to agree with that because I think both those films signaled a... What, because Tangled's like 2011, Brave was 2012, I remember that.
I don't
that.
Remember the dates, but...
It was around that, and I think that's kind of signaled the shift in Disney films of, like, loving yourself.
Female protagonists.
And not relying on, like, your appearance. Because if you think about Snow White and stuff like that, it's like true love's first kiss and everything, but it's based on their appearance. They haven't talked to each other, you know? It's just like, I've seen you and now we're in love. And it's like, it's very intense. So
in case of Sleeping Beauty, she never actually sees him. It's just a stranger.
It's a bit creepy when you think about it.
It's very creepy if you pay a lot of attention to it in that way, yeah.
Yeah, about that, like, I was going to say, like, there's kind of, since the Me Too movement and stuff like that, there's, like a polemic about the idea of, like, kissing the princess while she's sleeping. Kind of like, what about consent, you know?
Oh, so, I don't think that was...
What about the idea of the whole charming prince? Like... It's all about the appearance, as you said. What do you think, like, what is the signal and the ideas that is sent to children who watch this?
I feel like I reflect on my experience as a child watching Disney movies, because I remember when I watched, I think it was Snow White, where I think the end scene is when they kind of ride off into the distance on a horse, or they kind of, he carries her, I can't remember, but something like that, into the sunset kind of idea. And I remember I was still crying from, not the love story, from the creepiness of the witch and the scene where she trips over, I think it's the 1950s version, so like a very early Disney, where she is in the forest and trips over all these tree roots and everything, and there's like faces and it's all black and it's all disorientating and it's
before she
terrifying.
Gets to
So I was like still crying from that. My mom was like, no, it's a happy ending, look. And I was like, no, I'm terrified. So I didn't think the love or relationships had that much of an impact on me. Like, as in they didn't have an impact like, oh, this is what I'm going to get from men, you know, when I'm older. Like, they just didn't. I was more interested in the horror of Disney.
If anything, I think that kind of plays into the narrative. So to us, it's normal. It's like, okay, yeah, of course, it's this heterosexual man that like is probably well-built and is a prince. So, you know, there's royalty. He's not just a peasant. You know, and he marries, you know, the guy has to have a big social status. The girl can be, you know, a poor Which one is it that she can't go to the ball?
Cinderella.
Yeah, I'm terrible for this. You know, but she's lower class, but yet, you know, it has to be royal, you know, the nobility.
To save her.
What's the, in English royalty, this the guy who married this commoner.
Oh, like Princess Diana.
There you go.
And Kate Middleton.
That's
like a
Disney love story kind of thing.
Yeah, true.
Sort of marketing.
I mean, she's not really a commoner. She's middle class and went to St. Andrew's Uni, so she's all right.
Like, do you think that the princess has to always end up with the guy who rescue her?
I think in terms of marketing Disney films, that gets quite repetitive.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you can get away with it if you're showing, like, young kids because they don't pay as much attention as we do. Mm. And it's just, like, an expected narrative. Like, for a while, I think it defined Disney movies that had a princess or a prince in. So I like... That's why I'm more interested in other stories that they're doing, like Up, the Disney Pixar films, the collaborations, things like that, which don't focus on that. They're more about action and adventure because I think for us, we're like, okay, we know what's going to happen. But then they kind of play with that, with like Frozen and Brave and things like that. So they're like, oh no, it's a bit different.
I just remembered another one. Moana was a really good one because it was like a girl finding... One of the new ones, yeah. She just wanted adventure, and there wasn't really any male love interest. It was just Maui and her going off on adventures across the seas, which was.
I think that
quite
goes into like the Brave and Tangled category, yeah, for sure.
And I think we can start talking about, because we're talking about love and Disney, we can talk in case of like Coco, Miguel's love for music. You know, it doesn't,
definitely.
And the love for his family as well, and how those two are conflicted. It's no longer about, you know, the heterosexual couple and how they overcome difficulties and then get together, but rather, how do I manage something that is so important to me, like music, if that goes against what also is a part of me, like family. So it's a discovery of identity kind of playing into this switch that you were talking about in the 2011, 2012 films.
Well, just a quick question, which Disney movie would you like to forget?
Oh, that's such a good question.
I think with Disney, they have this reputation of being good films. Like, they haven't released a bad film, but I still think you could find one if you wanted. What do you guys think? I'm struggling to think.
I'm struggling to think. Because if you look, the only reason I might think Snow White is bad is if I look at it from a context now. If I look at it now, I just don't enjoy it because of the, like you said, heteronormative sort of
but
portrayal.
But if you look at the technical scale at the time,
it was groundbreaking.
Yeah.
And to be honest, the songs in there are pretty solid. I mean, minus one where she's singing about the wishing well, like that's very annoying and high pitched. But like the other songs, like Hi Ho, and
that's a good one.
The animation is good. It's hard. I'm not sure if I would cut any, because if you look at it in their context, they were good for their time.
True.
I maybe suggest sequels of things. Mm-hmm. Like, what other sequels are they?
I think there was a sequel for Little Mermaid. Yeah. Don't cut the Lion King sequel.
I haven't seen it because I didn't feel the need to see
it.
I'm like, happy with the first one.
but I agree. Maybe some of the sequels.
Maybe some of the live-action ones that were just unnecessary.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, live-action.
We didn't need them. Like, we don't need Ken Branagh to direct Cinderella.
But I think we didn't. Those who still saw the VHSs and everything.
So it was for a different generation.
I'm pretty sure we're not the target audience. Maybe for nostalgia's sake.
Probably. Yeah.
But if you're not overcome by nostalgia, then you're not going to buy a ticket for it.
It's young kids and their families,
I don't know if this is a Disney one, but there's this... this is two guys who are like gamblers, and then they go to the new world.
Road to El Dorado.
I absolutely hate that movie.
I've never heard of it.
I love that movie. It's not Disney.
It's not Disney.
Oh,
okay.
But I love it. It's so funny.
That's a movie I want to forget.
If it's not Disney, what is it?
It's an animated movie.
It's animated, but I can't remember which.
Yeah. I just thought it was Disney. Okay. It doesn't count, I guess.
All right. One thing about love in Disney movie is, like, according to you, the wrongest and the more realistic, on the contrary. what would you keep, what would you not keep? Like, what would you say to your children for real? Like,
so what would I show them being like, this is more realistic? Yeah. That's really good. I want to say Tangled, because you get the fairy tale, but then you also get a kind of twist with the evil, is it stepmother?
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting. And it's more entertaining to watch because it's not like the kind of collection of films like Beauty and the Beast, Snow White, Cinderella, where it's like, they end up together. It's different and it's more entertaining and it's so funny. I'd probably Brave. That is a good one because it's funny. The animation is such, it's amazing quality. And you know, it's about like, it's at the end of the day, it's about a sassy teenager who wants to like, get away from her family. And I kind of related to that. So I think I'd show my sons or daughters that.
Culturing them in.
And be like, go ride a horse somewhere. Go to Scotland. It's lovely.
Is Brother Bear Disney?
I think so, yeah.
I quite like the love. Again, it doesn't have to be relationships of the amorous type. So I think Brother Bear is one of overcoming loss through, you know, through let's keeping it simple, it's just like love for animals, to put it very bluntly, and love for life in a sense, you know.
They, I haven't seen it for ages.
Yeah,
so.
Seed God! and, you know, they go on and embark on this journey, so there's aspects of adventure, and it's pretty funny as well with the mooses. or I'd say the more recent ones were, is it Big Hero 6 as well?
Oh, yeah, Big Hero 6.
You know, that's, again, coping with loss, but through your talents and your passion. And I think that's kind of, along with Coco, where Disney might be moving towards, as in do your thing, which has kind of become a bit repetitive now, but like a trope in Disney. But like, oh, there's this character that it's in kind of dysfunctional ambient or this place. But he has to, you know, pursue his or her objective. Like Officer Hobbs, you know, in Zootopia. And you have to go.
Zootopia is such a good one.
Zootopia touches on so many, you know, topics of nowadays, you know. You know, discrimination, police brutality, racial discrimination. But in this case, we're talking about animal species, Special discrimination. but you know, it's and they tap up on fanatism. You know, it's quite something.
That's true. Yeah.
I'd have to say again, Moana, because she shows a love for her family and also her purpose in life. So she's trying to find that, and I think Disney show it in such a fun, exciting and also kind of thrilling way. In terms of relationships, I'm going to go for Mulan again.
Yes.
I mean, controversial opinion, but she does get to know Shang. It's just under the disguise of a guy. And the turning point is when she reveals she's a girl and suddenly Shang has a change of perception in who he's gotten to know. But at the end of the day, they have gotten to know each other, just maybe not at face value. And then the second film, the sequel, is actually, I enjoyed it. It does deal with the issues there. So I found it was quite a mature way of showing kind of relationships, how they don't always work out and there are going to be difficulties. So I would show them Mulan and Mulan 2 to show to show my future kids that, you know, relationships don't always work out, but you know, you can get through them. There are methods, but it's not all sparkling, presented, perfect.
Oh, that's
by the
so
end of
wise.
It.
I love that.
I feel like I'm just stumbling on my words.
No.
Like we mentioned, like the heteronormativity of the couples in Disney movies. Do you have any thoughts on that? Like on the love stories that are very heteronormative. Like, have you ever thought about any two characters of the same sex that would have end up together and would have been a better couple? You know?
Mulan messes that up. Shang, everyone's like, Shang at one point probably thought he was gay because like he starts, like him and Mulan, they click. But I mean, there was Beauty and the Beast where in the live action remake, they did make, his name? Not Gaston, but his, begins with an L, I think. His sidekick has feelings for him, but it's very obvious in the live-action one. But in the original Disney one, obviously that wasn't.
Didn't they block that out from some countries, though?
Yeah, they did. I think maybe in China.
Probably.
They had to block that out.
Yeah, it's very. I think it's high time for, like, for Disney to have a homosexual couple of some kind, like, at the forefront. But you have to consider, like, how awful the general public is, because they're still, honestly, because I think we're all quite liberal, open-minded people here, so we're just like, yeah, fine, do it, like it's high time.
Yeah.
But there's still people on the internet being like, no, this is ridiculous, and I'm like, oh, God, because I have a colleague who I used to work with has just had a baby with her wife, and obviously they're going to show their daughter all these Disney movies, but it has, it's kind of like a one-sided narrative for them. In terms of hetero and homosexual stuff. So I think it would be great. I mean, you can always read, I'm convinced you can always read homosexual undertones in Disney films, like between like supporting characters, like minor characters. But it would be great if they just changed the game a bit.
Yeah.
And because it would make them, it would make films more exciting, and I would go to see it. I wouldn't see a live action. I'd go and see that.
Yeah.
Mike and Sully. I'd love to see those two. Because Mike has
Monsters
Inc.
Oh, okay.
That's Disney Pixar.
Okay,
yeah, because Mike ends up like having an anonymous because you don't really explore, because Monsters Inc. University sees their actual bonding.
Yeah. So they live together, don't they?
Yeah,
they're roommates.
They're roommates as well. Yeah. They part from the same sorority for girls. What's it for the guys?
You know,
the US. Fraternity.
Fraternity,
you know, part of the same fraternity, they compete together, and, you know, it's like, oh, I trust you, buddy. You know,
so, buddy.
Buddy, exactly. So their buddies own each other.
No, that's
But that
true,
could
yeah.
easily work.
Yeah, because in the first one, Mike's with Celia, the girl who looks like Medusa,
with snakes,
basically. Yeah. And that's pushed a lot, and Mike's kind of, Mike Wazowski's kind of like this alpha male guy, even though he's really short, and Sully's the real alpha male, because he's like... But I love it when they're like with Boo, because it's like a gay couple with like adopted daughter.
Yeah. Like they could really exploit that.
Because it kind of is. So
yeah, pretty much.
I feel like I quite like letting the film sit and see how people interpret it. But if they are going to do something with which is like LGBT plus inclusive, they should just make new stories instead of trying to rework old ones, because I think people are always going to get protective or like over their old ones, and we need new stories anyway, so they might as well create new characters, create a new situation, and just update the whole the whole narrative instead of reworking older ones.
I agree with that. I think if you look at any cinema and what they're showing, it is sequels, prequels, remakes. And that's been going on for a few years. So if I saw an original film, I'd be like so excited. I'd be like, what is this? It's new, it's fresh, like. And because I'm not interested in, you know, remakes from any, you know, because you've got the Marvel franchise, like, dominating cinema, of course, with the new stories just being kind of added on and the universe is being expanded. And, I'd love to see something like that from Disney/Disney Pixar,
It is true. I agree with you in that a big portion, I don't know how big, of Disney's audience must be, you know, parents and families that would be massively against any kind of progressive side of Disney's movies. Perhaps now, of course, they're like kind of undertones or you know, they're implicit. But I think if they push that too much now, that might have a backlash. And of course, they're also aware of making money. So as progressive as they might have become, I think money's also going to be, going to play a massive role.
Which character were you in love with when you were a child?
Love is a strong word.
Yeah. Do you know what? Aladdin. Aladdin was pretty sweet.
Huh.
You know?
He stole from people. I don't know.
No. Yeah. To give to people who are hungry.
Debate the ethics of this.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole other episode. The ethics of Disney. I didn't have guys that I loved, because all the princes looked the same. It was like different white guy with different hair color. I was like... Could be. I thought they were all the same, because they were all called like Prince Charming, you know. So I thought they were all just the same man for a while.
True,
when I was younger. Yeah. So I had characters that I admired. So I admired the I think was she a widow in Aristocats? The Aristocats.
Oh
she
yeah.
She just owned
yeah.
all the cats. I loved her with her hair and her dress and just like in her Parisian apartment that I wanted. I admired Mike and Sully. I admired. Meredith from Brave. I just admired more than fell in love with.
Yeah.
Because I think falling in love with an animated character is like
slightly over
interesting.
The top.
Let's leave that to anime, shall we? Oh dear.
How about you?
Oh, God, you put me on the spot there. I watch a lot of anime. I again, like you said, like probably admire more than I would.
Like role model, kind of.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
yeah,
role admired. Model. I have a different answer then.
Okay,
but
yeah.
First, you can love characteristics of these characters, for example. Yeah. So I'll stick with, again, my favorite Disney film as of now, Coco, and I absolutely love Miguel's passion and devotion to his craft, like, especially those of us who are doing arts, you know, it's very inspiring to see, like, and he practices, and you know, it's like, oh, why am I not in the studio? I should be rehearsing something, you know, and it's sheer passion that drives them, which is, I think, the same kind of passion and motivation that we all had when we decided to pursue these careers.
Yeah.
And the thing, obviously, with us is that we've kind of started already, whereas he's just about, you know, about to enter the industry, to put it, in very commercial terms. But he could be one of the greats. You know, that's kind of like the story of one of the greats, yet he absolutely admires. There's this section of, I don't know if you watch CinemaSins.
I don't like CinemaSins, but...
They're very,
I know what it is, yeah.
There's a section in which they pause movies and then they either sin it or remove a sin.
Like if a plot point doesn't make sense or like a technical thing, like, oh, you can see the boom in the shot.
They call it out, yeah.
Okay.
And
then tally it up.
But they also like praise good parts of the future
film.
That's
good.
And like they paused at this point when Miguel is kind of, he closes his eyes while he's playing guitar.
Yeah.
And you know, because he's enjoying every note.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, and he pauses. It's like, let me praise this moment because every talented guitar player or any musician that I've seen puts that exact same face whenever, or when he looks at, I think it's the skeleton deer. the one who ends up being, spoilers? No, have you seen
Yeah, Bob yeah, we
I
have
seen it.
The one
so
who
good.
Ends up
it's
being
fine,
his great-great-grandfather.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, and he looks at him while he plays, and he's like absolutely marvelled. And again, in CinemaSins, they pause and says, let me again highlight the accuracy of this, because any gifted player completely humbles down before another gifted player. So, yeah, I think there's
a lot that
I admire.
Amazing.
His love for his craft is something that I love myself. Where I admire.
I do think CinemaSins is a poor form of film criticism, having studied film criticism for 2 years. I'm currently doing my dissertation on the film Get Out. Obviously not an animation film.
Yeah.
But again, with CinemaSins, and I was like, I'm reluctant to watch this, but people have told me to watch the CinemaSins of Get Out. They just keep like taking away the sins because it's so good. And I was like, I know. Point made.
Film.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's debatable.
They are not critics, though. They do say it's like, yeah.
They have random points, though, that aren't based on anything.
Yeah, exactly. They do a CinemaSins on CinemaSins. And they kind of do self-criticism and say, yeah,
good.
This
That's
is
good.
More for comedy than actual from
yes.
actual film criticism.
Yes, I agree, yes.
Yeah. I agree with the, like, appreciating characteristics of certain characters, because... When I had quite low expectations for The Princess and the Frog because it didn't get a lot of marketing.
Tiana.
I watched it and it's one of my favourite Disney films because I really admire Tiana and her work ethic. So basically what happens is like she's working hard for a restaurant and then the prince comes and gets turned into a frog. I'm not going to go on. But I really, really admire her for just always working towards one goal. And I thought that wasn't really seen in the other princesses. I thought they kind of got... things quite easily, or they were pursuing romance, but she just wanted to get a restaurant and she got it in the end. And I just thought, yeah,
that
I like that.
Love. That was a happy end.
Yeah.
Interesting. Most of them have like the idea of royalty as like the political system, and therefore you have the prince and the princess as male and female identity. What do you think about that? Why?
Okay.
I think it's just the fantasy of it all. Like, at the end of the day, especially for kids' films, it is nice to just have a mode of escapism. It is just a form of make-belief and storytelling. So royalty plays a part in that. Like, I feel we're quite distant from royalty and that kind of ideal of having all these riches, all these things laid out for you. I just think it's a form of escapism, that's why.
I mean, obviously I say that, but I'm in the UK, so it's kind of like quite different from France, probably.
about that. Yeah.
It's been a while since you guys had royalty.
I was thinking, like, in terms of animation and animation's aesthetics of Disney, like, royal things and expensive things like food, jewelry, costume are so much more attractive to the eye rather than kind of like dingy peasantry.
Oh, selling point, yeah.
But yeah, but like with, because you can experiment with color, like the shine of diamonds and things like that. I think it makes for the very rich animation. So I'm not thinking in terms of narrative, I'm thinking of image. Like sound and image, but I think royalty is very nice to look at.
Yeah. Well, analyzing that for a bit, I think so. 2 points. One is that it, to your point, it's we kind of distance that. I know Brecht talks about, like, you know, alienation and historicization. So if we see something that happens, I don't know, in the times of royalty, so Middle Ages kind of thing. Of course, we're not directly affected. You know, it doesn't really speak to us in a time frame. But the themes that are treated at that time are the same themes that want to resonate nowadays. Yeah. So perhaps it's creating this fantasy world where, and I think a lot of fantasy plays with a kind of medieval lore.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Take the Lord of the Rings, take. Even World of Warcraft and whatnot, you know, there is still bows and arrows and swords. So that already transports someone into this fantastic, not big budget, I'd say, but like glowing kind of fantasy world. So that's one aspect. And then the other aspect is perhaps not just royalty, but power. I think the idea of this bigger power that impacts on our protagonists. So for example, you can have like the Queen of, is it the Queen of Hearts in
Alice in Wonderland?
You know, she isn't a queen per se, you know, she's in Wonderland anyways. But she is the one that directly impacts or has a decision on, you know, on, oh god, I'm terrible for names today. What's wrong with me?
What are you thinking?
From Alice, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Alice.
Come on.
What's wrong with me? You know. But not just that, you know, you get in Up, you get the insurance companies, you get, you know, and they lose the trial. So therefore, they must have an escape to this ulterior political power. Mm-hmm. In Up, in the case of money, in any of the princess films, any of the actual royalty that have, or witchcraft, you know, any of the evil witches have the power to kill, to give life, to animate inanimate objects.
Yes, yeah.
So I think politics is just an extension. So politics can be big enough or strong enough to counter a witch's curse. And in the same way, strong imagination and a whole bunch of helium balloons can counter you know, a decision to, you know, demolish a small home.
Yeah. I was thinking of Brave again, with the kind of independent, like, no, there's no romantic partner, and also Meredith's rejection of royalty. So she's brought up in this castle in Scotland, and her mum and her dad like tell her to act a certain way, and she doesn't. She wants she wants freedom, and she wants to kind of live by her own rules. So it's this, she's not a villain or anything, she just rejects this kind of, because she didn't ask to be born into that kind of thing. It's like you know, Prince Harry and Prince William, you know, they were just born into it. It wasn't their choice necessarily, but now they have all these rules and stuff that they have to do. So I think that, her rejection of it, but I think it's like to do with like her teenager-ness of it.
Yeah,
as well.
And I think also she doesn't fit into that scene. Like in the first few scenes, I think you see this archery contest with all her like future suitors, and then her and her father are just mocking them. They just,
she's so much better.
Also, she just never really fit into that scene, so she's kind of carving her own space so she can fit into her own world, which is,
I also
quite
love
cool.
how that's demonstrated by her hair. Like, I remember listening to a review of the film on Radio 4 when it came out, so 7 years ago. Of like how long it took to digitally kind of like
every
individual
strand,
curls and the ginger and the orangeness of it. And I think the kind of wildness of her hair compared to how her mother's just like tied up and everything, it's very expressive of her character without saying anything, which I thought was really good.
And there's a bit where I think she has to fit all her hair into this head.
Oh yeah, and you get the little
she's just got this little like curl coming out, and it's so symbolic of her and like trying to fit into this thing, but it's just not happening.
Yeah.
So it's like the break away from power, or like just a bit of rebellion, if you wish. That really,
like Moana as well.
That, exactly. Yeah. And I think that plays really well into a youngish audience. You know,
that's what kids do.
When we had when we 15-year-old selves.
Yeah. That's what kids do. They misbehave. They run away. They want to do the opposite of what their parents say. And I think they don't care about my prince, my princess. Like, they don't care about that anymore. I don't think they ever cared. I didn't care. So, yeah.
Okay. So, would you say that Disney movies had an influence on how you see love and how you saw love at the time and how you see it now?
I think so, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think I had a very idealized view of love, and I think I still do now, just because I like to think. I don't think things are perfect. Watching Disney movies, you kind of see love at first sight, and I don't believe in that at all now. Like, maybe lust at first sight, but not love.
Oh my god, yeah. Some Wednesday pop.
But I think, looking back and looking now, I think anything that's worth it, you have to work hard for. Like, in whatever you do, whether it's relationships, your work, like, family, you just need to put effort in. And I think also, the nice thing is it's kind of made me evaluate what standard I set. And I know a lot of relationships is like trial and error. But I think it's quite nice in your head, if you've been on your own for a long time, just to establish what you definitely want and what you definitely deserve. And then just hope you'll find someone.
Yeah, it's really good. You're full of wise things. I love it. Like with the trial and error stuff, I was like, oh, so true. I think I do enjoy the kind of like marriage kind of thing, as in like, oh, finally I found someone who's perfect for me. But in those princess and prince narratives of love at first sight, it's presented in a way that's just like, it's not debated. It's just like,
it's
done.
Just there.
And I'm like, I definitely don't believe in love at first sight. Definitely lust. But I think sometimes, I think you can't use Disney as an example for your own life. Like that's just, I think with things like Shrek, and I know it's not Disney, but
Shrek is
directly,
such a quality film.
Yes, it directly parodies that.
Yeah.
And the thing how it's based on appearance and like, oh, Shrek is ugly. And that's why it's amazing and people have come back to it. I just think you can't follow. You have to be a bit cynical. Yeah. I think that's quite British, whereas these stories are quite American.
Yeah.
But don't you think it can be a bit, like, cruel for some people? Because it feels like, as children, you kind of construct a vision of love that is idealized without them, like, realizing it. But then when they grow up, it can't be that way, and then...
I think there's a point about innocence, for example, that can be related to love. Like, yes, you can expect to have, as a kid, you know, fall in love at first sight or be like, you know, infatuated, because that's perhaps the first step before falling for someone. Just the physical attraction, just the persona of whoever. Of course, that was absolutely not what was going through the princess's heads when they...
What was?
Exactly. One of them wasn't even thinking. She was asleep. But like nowadays, I think that the belief of, oh, you know what? Maybe destiny, maybe fate, you know, maybe love for a sight, or maybe an encounter that changes life forever, whether that's love related or not. I think that's the value of Disney movies. You know, that sometimes have to do with love, you know. It was like, right, are you going to pursue your dreams, or do you want to stay with a bit of a shout out to La La Land, you know. It's like, do you want to break through and go to the next level, or do you want to...
You can't have it all.
Exactly, you have to choose. But like, keeping that innocence of, you know what, this is... And perhaps innocence is also in the American way, you know, like, oh, can you make it, you know?
American dream.
Exactly. But like doing it the American way is what I mean is their idiosyncrasy of greatness. You know, the idea of you know, you're going to be like the greatest showman. This is the biggest show in the world. Like, there's absolutely no, it's very, you know, absolutist. You know, you either broke and poor and your theater's burnt down, or you are like the greatest showman. No, I mean,
yeah.
And you know, and like, this is the massive show, and like, you've got elephants and stuff. but that's what I'm saying. You know, perhaps for the American audience, success is being
Label
big,
break.
Yes,
and failure is definitely being broke.
It's having a family. It's money. It's talent. It's yeah.
But the illusion, perhaps illusion is a bit too political. But the idea, the innocence of, you know what, I can make it, is what Disney is trying to reinforce, being based in America. And that includes love as well.
About that, then, like, we don't all come from the same countries in this room. Mm-hmm. So, like, what do you think about the vision people have on Disney movies in your country? Like, is it popular? And also, what do you think about the fact that it's like a US industry who is, I don't know, exporting, dominating the animated film industry? So,
I think whether you like it or not, Disney is popular in the UK, I'd say. Like, Disney Store, there's one in London, there's a few dotted around the country. All my friends, like, grew up with Disney films, so it's very much a part of...
No.
The next one's in France, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So it's very much part of, like, the culture and nostalgia and growing up. But I think also Disney does have nice animation. I think whether you like the stories or not, you can't deny that what they've done for animation has been groundbreaking and is nice to watch. So, yeah, that's my addition to it.
That's good. I remember growing up and in primary school, so like 8, 9, maybe a bit younger, and the richest would go to Disneyland, and I thought it was like the most expensive thing ever. Yeah. Like, I'd never seen an advert. I didn't really get what money was, but like, it was like, it seemed like the ultimate holiday destination. Mm. And I didn't realize there was two. I thought there was one. My family never went there because I think there's like, for a holiday, because I think there's like certain moments in your life where you'd go. And it's if you're very young, so maybe 6 or 7, or I'm not really sure. Or maybe you go when you're older for nostalgia, like our age now. Mm. But I think there are very specific times where you could go. That was me growing up with Disney. That it was a holiday destination. It's where you could meet your favorite characters all dressed up, Buzz Lightyear, etc. But for me, it was about money. It was a bit like, no, it's so expensive, we can't go.
Okay.
How do we see Disney movies in Peru is as they sell them, as a foreign product. You know, people can afford and go, you know, to the cinemas and you'd watch a Disney movie. And yeah, that'd be the cool thing of the Pirates of the Caribbean probably would be like, it's like, oh yeah, you grow more grown up, you will watch
Pirates. That's Disney, isn't it?
That's Disney, yeah.
That's good.
And, but obviously, you'd see it as a foreign thing because all of those names are in English. The original films, if you watch it sub, that'd be in English. If you are, you know, if you can understand English, if you speak two languages, they're cool. You can go watch subbed and kind of understand. But most likely, you'd get it as a product because you don't just get the movie, but you get the movie and the toy.
Mm-hmm.
You get the movie and, I don't know, and you learn the song in Spanish. And it sounds exactly the same. Obviously, the lyrics are different. And every little girl wants to be Elsa. And, and you know, I don't know if it plays as much for boys, I guess, for young male kids. But funny thing, Donald Duck, a guy who was wearing like a Donald Duck costume, he was awarded a merit award from Congress, from Peruvian Congress.
Wow.
Not in Lima, but down south, in a city down south. And it was mocked. You know, they were mocked, like, that's ridiculous. How can you do that? And it was populism, because politicians and even parents understand it as a product because it's sold to us, and at least they're not shy about that.
It's consumer culture.
Yeah, because, you know, the next Disney is what, in Orlando?
Yes.
Yeah. In so that's like a 6-hour, 7-hour plane ticket that's probably unaffordable. So it's still distant. It's still expensive. It's very American. And yeah, it's a product on its own.
But do you think that like the use of the Spanish language for Coco influenced the fact that you like this movie in particular?
I didn't see the movie in Spanish.
Really?
No, I was in Australia at the time, so
international star.
And but I would have loved to have seen Coco in Spanish.
Yeah.
Absolutely, 100%. Especially because they alternate English and Spanish.
Yeah.
So when they were saying like, ah, oh, mamita, mamita. Grandma Coco is not feeling like, no, why would you switch to English? You're Mexican. Yeah. What are you on about? And then, or when Grandma Coco was like, oh, I remember. It's like, no, people should know no English. If anything, you wouldn't like Americans anyway. Because of the historical period.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
But yeah, that just broke my heart.
And more historical accuracy needed.
No. No, I just felt, I don't know. And I'll keep
my just remembered myself. My parents honeymooned in Disney, Florida.
Why?
Wow. Well, they went to Florida, then went on Disneyland as like 30-year-olds. Just like, let's go on Space Mountain.
No shame.
Yeah.
How romantic.
Yeah. I mean, they're still together. So.
It certainly worked.
The magic of Disney.
Yeah, in the show, usually, we also talk about the body. And I was thinking if you had any thoughts on the image of the body that the movies give and how it maybe has changed. Because, yeah, Izzy, I was talking to you about the fact that the aesthetic quite evolved during over decades. So, yeah, if you have anything about that.
You mean like the female body?
Yeah, but male as well. But I think it's probably more about female body. But maybe Eduardo can say something about
that. I remember the Robin Hood animated Robin
yes.
Hood
oh, I love
version.
That one.
And there was this dog that was disabled. Do you know?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, she was wearing a...
Yeah,
she was wearing,
no,
a,
I do remember that.
It wasn't a plaster, it's a...
Cast.
A cast,
there you go.
Yeah.
A cast, and, you know, he was wearing crutches. So obviously he was struggling, and, you know, that was the first disabled body that you could see in an animated movie. Because otherwise you wouldn't. And it was them, and it was like a kid, I think, that was always sick, and it was his mom. Mm-hmm. And there was this moment, I think, where they're howling. And, but that's just to depict poverty. So obviously a disabled body equals poverty because healthcare wasn't a thing, obviously, in medieval times, let alone with the king, who was like, I think, a lion or something
yes,
like that.
Yes, yeah.
And yet Robin Hood was like a very, you know, quick and sly fox and whatnot, very clever and everything. So, yeah, I think, of course, you can't really talk about the body of animals. as
well,
in, not for
if
those.
They are quite anthropomorphic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, so the body of animals probably doesn't speak much because you probably wouldn't be able to tell them in real life. But I remember there was a chicken, a hen, that was, she was like, like voluptuously drawn and designed. And I was like, okay, that looks human. So in my young head, I was like, okay, that kind of makes sense. I know what this character would be in real life. But looking at it now, I don't know how disturbed I'd be remembering a big-breasted hen, you know, that kind of dances with a dog and just pushes him towards the breast. It's like something a bit messed up about that, I think.
I think I really appreciate Maori and Moana because character designers really did their research.
Yeah.
So they looked up Polynesian characteristics. So they've got like the muscles, they've got the hair texture right, they've got the facial features spot on, and then the tattoos. I think for like new Disney films, they're really improving. We're trying to make diverse and obviously you can't really get things accurate all the time, but well-researched characters. I just think Maori is a prime example of good research and good animation design.
For me, I think of, I think in recent years there's a lot of criticism about the kind of Barbie doll figure of Disney princesses and also the whiteness of Disney princesses. Mm. So that made me think of Lilo and Stitch. And I recently, in my first year, I rewatched it with friends just for like nostalgia reasons. Yeah. And is it the mum or the sister?
Nanny.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sister.
The sister, the older sister who looks after Lilo. Yeah, and Stitch. Is very voluptuous. She's not, she has like my thighs, like proper big thighs. I'm like, yes. she's not white, obviously, she's from like Hawaii. And she just seems so real to me.
Yeah.
I think she had a flat stomach, maybe not remember.
She does.
I was a bit like, give them some credit. but it was just, she's so different to the stereotypical slim princess kind of template that I think Disney use, especially for their princes, because I said they all look the same. but I think that one was really interesting. They didn't make a big deal out of it at the time because that was released in 2002. And you'd think you'd see that now because they'd be like, oh, we've progressed, but that was back, that was years ago. So I think that's quite interesting that they haven't repeated that necessarily. They haven't been like, they're like, oh no, you know, Merida's oh, it's Merida, not Meredith, isn't it? Yeah.
Merida.
Jesus. Is it? No, so it's Merida.
Merida,
yeah.
Merida.
Yeah.
I thought you said Meredith.
Like, yeah, no, I did. It's wrong. Merida's mum, she's kind of like slim. Like they were just kind of slim.
Yeah.
And
not
of course,
very
the father, the old king, is like proper, like, you know, massive.
I think that affected me more than the heteronormative love relationships because I was like, oh, men have to be like this and women have to be like this, you know. Whereas with, is it Nani?
Nani.
Yeah. She just did her own thing, and I love her for it, and I would show my kids that.
That movie's really, really emotional, especially
so good.
Sushi,
so good.
It just covers lots of topics, like kind of family issues, like being the other, which Stitch feels like he doesn't
like
belong,
and stuff
bullying. Like,
you don't think about it when you're a kid, though. You're just like, oh, Stitch is blue. And then you're just like, but yeah, watching it again about 2 years ago, I was like, oh my God.
And also with relationships, like there's a guy who likes Nani, but she's so preoccupied with looking after Lilo that she just doesn't have time for him. And that was quite real. That felt very different.
She has priorities. She has an aim. She's driven. She has purpose. Yeah.
The show's called Dear Country, but it's a special episode on Disney. So imagine that you could say something to Disney, I don't know, people, industry, just to the movies themselves. I don't mind. What would you say to them?
Please create new movies, but like, as in, please create new narratives, but use the old animation style, because a lot of people would really like that. A lot of people miss the beauty of the animation, and Disney are very capable of doing it. So new stories, old animation. Yes.
I would say don't be afraid to break the mold. So kind of jumping on your point a bit, like I think in lots of Disney films have hinted at progressive themes. For example, in Toy Story 3, when Ken tries on Barbie's clothes, like hints kind of gender fluidity or homosexuality. Yeah. I think that's interesting, but it is used for a comedic response from the audience. So I think if you kind of take that idea and make it more central and just present someone's life, you know, like, for example, Merida, she's just a person. Like, you can just have her gay or something, you know, just like, just make it's not hard, but you don't really have to comment on it that much. You can just be like that, and if your kids ask questions about it, just be like, well, sometimes men love other men and they get married and they have kids, and most of the time kids are like, fine, whatever, I don't care, I make my dinosaurs like hiss. Like, and they're dinosaurs. They're not like, they'll be fine with that. So I think Disney is fine. It just needs to go along with society a tiny bit more. Mm. Yeah.
I'd say put some more funding into the shorts. I'd love to see like compilation of Disney shorts, because I'm pretty sure
they have DVDs of them.
You have, oh my God. Well,
yeah, of shorts. Because they're so...
And they must have so many projects in the desk.
Yes.
So I'm pretty sure they can get any associate artists that are emerging and put their stuff more often.
See,
that perhaps have a bigger creative merit to
them.
Thank you for listening to this special episode of Dear Country about Disney movies. My name is Clémence, and I'm an Erasmus student at the University of Warwick. If you want more of this kind of episode, please let us know on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or at dearcountry@gmail.com.